The second time I've received a Windows support call telling me about problems on my computer. And last time they did not use the name Microsoft. This time they violated the trademark. They claim to be Microsoft.
So let's set the stage. So you're, in other words, you're just sitting there. You're sitting there doing your own business. You get a phone call from a company purporting to be Microsoft. That's the company you actually work for, and they claim that something is what?
The Windows license on my computer had expired, and so all the services on it have shut down. And this was a recorded call. They left me with a phone number to call up, right? So I can give you that phone number, and everybody can call this phone number.
Wait,
So
you want everybody to call this phone number just so we can harass these guys, which I'm okay with.
I'm okay with it.
Okay, great. Go for it. What's the phone number
Okay.
that you want? And if you're going to harass them, the goal is to do what? Just eat up their time and make their lives miserable a little bit?
That's what I try to do. The last time I got one of these calls, I gave him complete control of a virtual machine, that had a snapshot of, had nothing on it, was brand new vanilla machine, gave him complete control of it. When he got to the point where he needed me to pay, I claimed that I didn't have a credit card because I'm nervous about having credit cards because they can be stolen. And he couldn't believe it. Everybody has a credit card, right? So we agreed. He convinced me that I should go to I think it was Walmart and get a money order. So I left him with control of the machine, and I quote went to Walmart. Actually, I just continued my workday for a while until he freaked out and contacted again. I said, "Yeah, I just got back." And eventually I had to give it up, right? And show him, "Okay, here's all the monitoring stuff I've got on this machine. Here's where you did this. Here's where you installed your stuff. Here's where it hooks into the system." He got so mad. He got so angry for wasting his time. I said, "Hey, at least you weren't on the phone with my father." This time though, they violated the trademark. Anyway, yeah. So I do have a phone number here. This is in the U.S. 855-539-4914.
Okay, repeat it one more time. 855
539-4914. And
494.
you call up and you say that you got a phone call saying that the license on your computer, on your Windows computer, has expired.
But, of course, you,
Now, you know what? The thing is, though, by the time you publish this recording, they may have moved on. So maybe you shouldn't call that number.
But if you do, but if somebody wants to have some fun at these folks' expense, of course do what Aaron did, which is use a VM. Don't use your real machine or give them access. I know I have to don't have to say this, but just for the love of all that's holy, don't.
Yeah, and when they ask for money, make sure you're using Jeremy's account
My
information,
credit card. It
not
starts
your
with
own.
1111. Cool. Well, fun. All right, great. Well, I think you're also, you do a lot of work in the federal space and trying to make people more secure. So, like, what's on your roadmap to getting people more secure? Like, what do you think is a hot topic?
Okay, that's a great question. One thing that I've been working on is going to be something I think is going to grow a lot, and I think DeviceGuard is going to be a big player in this. DeviceGuard being part of Windows 10, it is whitelisting, and that is saying we're only going to allow authorized software to run in this computer, nothing else.
Gosh, if only there was a training class people could take to learn about device guard. Man, that would be awesome.
That and AppLocker, but unfortunately, what is there? Oh, wait,
Well,
I
if
know
only
of
the,
one.
hey,
I know of
exactly.
one.
If only there was a training class. So, okay, cool. Well, great. So you're saying that AppLocker and device guard are becoming more interesting. Why don't we spell out the differences ever so briefly for folks between AppLocker and device guard, just so like if they don't want to take a training class, or they just want to understand it from a cursory level, why don't you go ahead and get started and explain to folks the differences, say, between AppLocker and device guard. And I know you said it, I'll just say it out loud again. Device AppLocker is Windows 7 and later, but device guard is a new Windows 10 only creature. So help us understand the two.
So yeah, like you said, Windows 7, 2008 R2 and newer. AppLock, you can do a lot with AppLocker. I'm a big fan of it. The biggest difference is one thing you really can't do well with AppLocker is stop people who have admin rights. Someone with admin rights can defeat AppLocker. So, that's a limitation. Now, as long as you can constrain them to running as standard user, AppLocker can do a lot for you. And, you know, most end users should be running as standard user anyway. Sure. So, and for scenarios like kiosks, for scenarios like ATM machines and other single-purpose machines, you can lock it down really, really well. The big difference with Device Guard is it has a foundation in the hardware, right? So UEFI and verification of a lot of things, you can actually control what happens in the kernel. You can control the behavior of admins on the machine. And so you can get even more robust control with that.
And you're seeing a lot of new, you're seeing people who are rolling out Windows 10. I think there are some cases that are great for Device Guard and other cases that maybe should only be used with AppLocker. Do you want to, since you're dealing with this a lot, do you want to help us understand some of the cases where one might be better than the other?
Oh, why don't you tell me? Because you're telling me that there's, I'm interested in the scenarios you're seeing.
Okay, sure. So, you know, the kinds of, for my understanding of the guidance around AppLocker and Device Guard is that Device Guard is more meant for machines that don't take on a lot of change. So, for instance, point-of-sale machines or the kinds of attacks that we've seen at big-box retailers. The idea is that you kind of get a machine that's all fixed up nice and pretty, and then you run it through the Device Guard shellacking, and by the time it's over, there's a hardened shell around it, and if anything changes on that machine, more or less, then that's it. AppLocker is a little more tolerant with regards to how flexible you can even create rules on the fly. In other words, group policy gives you pretty good control over creating a new rule in AppLocker, but with regards to Device Guard, it's actually a little bit harder, but there's more power. Like Device Guard, like I said, is more of a, in my opinion, more of a shellac kind of hard shell coding.
I think that's going to be true for things that are not digitally signed. So it they expose an easy ability to catalog sign, third party stuff or stuff that's not signed by a trusted publisher. So you can create hashes and then create a signed catalog of those hashes. Now, if any of the hashes change, meaning any of the files have changed at all, the signature is no longer valid. But for things like, say, you've got Microsoft Office and you're updating it regularly, right? It's still signed by the same trusted publisher. You don't need to create catalog signatures for that. So I believe you've still got the flexibility there. Now, I need to spend more time with Device Guard to get, fully strong on that. But that's my understanding of it right now.
All right. Well, there you go. So excellent. So basically, in general, whitelisting and making sure that things are only able to run when they say they're supposed to be run is sort of a kind of a new hot ticket item.
Yeah. So the NSA actually came up with a white paper. It's published. It's available on the web. That describes a fairly relatively easy way to use AppLocker whitelisting, and it's basically if it's in a directory, if an admin put it on the box, then it's okay. If an admin didn't put it on the box, it's not okay. And the way that's enforced is if it's in a directory that is user writable, it's not allowed to execute.
And this is all okay. And that makes sense. You should be able to do that all through AppLocker. Is that what you just said?
Yeah. So you can do that you can do that with path rules, which are pretty easy to put in place.
Sure.
And so everything under program files x86, and the Windows directory is allowed to execute, except for directories under there that are user writable. Under program files and program files x86, you should never find any, but you can scan for them using a tool like Access Check from Sysinternals to look for those. Under the Windows directory, there's a lot of directories that are user-writable, so you need to create a lot of exclusions to the path rule. But it's fairly straightforward, and then once you do that, and you do this for DLLs, you do this for scripts, and then you block a couple of specific tools that can also be used to run arbitrary code, you know, like mshta.exe. You know, once you do that, then, you know, you're browsing the web, you know, something triggers an exploit, manages to get through all the different defenses of Microsoft Edge or Google Chrome or whatever you're running, and it runs arbitrary code within that process. It cannot put a file on the disk that can then be executed. So that's cool. Really, really constrains you know, what the effect of an exploit actually is.
That's cool. And, yeah, you know, for folks who want to just get some AppLocker, I wouldn't even say 101, I'd actually say 201. In other words, if you want to get your brain sort of engaged with AppLocker, a couple years ago at Microsoft Tech Ed, I did a talk on AppLocker. So if you Google, if you Bing for Moskowitz AppLocker Tech Ed, you'll find that talk, and I think it's helped out some folks. So if you've not checked it out, you know, feel free to check it out, my friends.
I think that was 2010, right?
I think. Whoa, you got a good memory. I think you're right. Let's try it. Let's go to our browser. We'll type Moskowitz. I spelled my own last name wrong. That's sad. Moskowitz AppLocker Tech Ed. Let's see what comes up. 2010. Oh my gosh, you got the memory of a steel trap. Excellent. Yeah, I remember that talk very much so, because I don't know, it was just one of my, what was a real fun one. Cool. Great. Well, this is any other parting thoughts? Any other things you're working on? Want to share?
Yeah. Let me just add one thing about that is, you know, for many years, people wrote applications expecting that they could write to anywhere in the file system, they could execute from anywhere. And so you have programs expecting to be able to store their data under program files. When we went to non-admin, that broke, right? You could no longer do that. You can't store stuff in HKlocal machine. You can't store stuff under program files in the Windows directory. And so the big hit there when we went to standard user was application compatibility. Lots of stuff broke, and we needed to get that stuff working again to move forward. This new model of whitelisting, I think, is going to be important. And I believe the U.S. Department of Defense is going to standardize on that. So that's going to create a new app compat issue, which is, you know, where can you put stuff that you execute? There's a lot of programs that assume that they can execute from any directory.
Right.
Right. In fact, Google Chrome, Firefox, these all have per-user installs. So you can download, install without admin rights, and it's in your own profile directory. OneDrive now executes out of the user profile. And those are going to become problematic in the new world that we're heading toward.
Yeah,
so
I mean, I always like to say that you could just download, you know, sometimes they're called portable apps or just regular .exes or whatever, and you can run them from anywhere. I mean, Windows is meant to run stuff until you tell it otherwise.
Yeah, so one of the ways we can continue to do that is through things like the Windows Store, right, where you're downloading stuff that runs in an app container. And the operating system is negotiating, you know, downloading that. It goes through this walled garden where, you know, there's some level of vetting that it's, you know, it's digitally signed, et cetera, et cetera. So the new modern apps or Universal Windows programs, Universal Windows Platform, UWP apps, Universal apps, I think we're calling them. Those all go through a mechanism where you can download these things. Each individual user can download them and run them, and those can still be allowed in this new model because they actually get installed to a global location that is managed by the operating system, and then they run within tightly constrained app containers, which greatly limits their ability to interact with the system with other apps and things like that.
Additionally, we're not super developer focused here at GP Answers, of course, but it just as a parting shot, if there are any developers, you should know about this idea called Project Centennial, which will marry your old school Win32 apps and drag them kicking and screaming backward into the, or forward rather, into the Microsoft App Store. So it's sort of a bridge between this older world or today's world and the possible future world. So people should just know about that. You could, like I said, search for that, learn about it. There's plenty of material on Project Centennial for developers.
Yeah.
Cool.
That'll be very interesting when that happens.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground. We've talked about what's new, talked about your book. What's next for Aaron Margosis?
I don't know. When the book is done, I'm going to have this big void in front of me, I think.
Yeah, you have all this time. You're like, you kind of don't know how you what to do with all that time all of a sudden of not writing a book anymore. Been there, done that, got the t-shirt.
Kind of like in The Princess Bride, where the guy finally gets his revenge and doesn't know what to do with the rest of his life.
Right. You know? The second is over.
Yeah.
Well, cool,
maybe,
man.
Maybe I become a pirate.
Yeah, the Dread Pirate Margosis?
Yes.
And then when you die, you just hand it over to somebody else, and he'll be the Dread Pirate Margosis. Awesome. All right, my man. Super great. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening to folks if you've stayed on this long. And excellent. Thanks again. This has been super fun. I'll talk to y'all soon.
Thanks, everybody.
See ya.